Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. Thank you guys so much for tuning into another episode of the Ivy Podcast. I am your host for today's show, Angela Alberti. If you've had a chance to listen to any of the podcasts that we've done recently over 2022, a lot of it is entailed around the female empowerment series, especially leaders that we see in the workforce ecosystem. And I'm so excited to sit down and speak with Vanessa Miller of Atrium. Vanessa, can you give the audience a little bit of a background on yourself, please?
Absolutely. Hi, everyone. And thank you so much for having me, Angela. I am Vanessa Miller. I'm VP of Talent Technology here at Atrium. Our team here oversees all of our HR technology partnerships that directly correspond with our many workforce solutions service offerings here at Atrium. And excited to be here today.
Yeah, absolutely. I love getting the chance to chat with you, Vanessa, because I feel like you and everything that is represented through Atrium really embodies this evolvement that we've seen responding to just the fluctuations or trends within the workforce ecosystem. And I'd love if you can just kind of dive deeper into some historical context of Atrium's background and how it really evolved from a traditional staffing agency. And now that one really has just flourished over many different verticals and models.
Absolutely. I would love to. So we are in business since 1995, so 27 years now, founded by Rebecca Cheney Leventhal out of New York City. So to your point, we started out as a traditional staffing agency, really strong in administrative placements. And today, fast forward to today, we now have 5 enterprise workforce solutions as part of our Atrium Works division. And we still have the Atrium Staffing division nationally that has a versatile book of offerings within that staffing portfolio. So we're with Rebecca founding us. We are a women-owned firm. Every dollar that our clients spend with us counts for diversity spend, which is important for a lot of our clients from a procurement goal standpoint, also social responsibility and diversity goals as well. So diversity is definitely a value and a pillar of ours. I think being woman-owned, that's not where that commitment stops. It's certainly where it starts. Right. And we really live the diversity, inclusion, and belonging in many of our service offerings and in our own internal values here at Atrium. But now that road to becoming a kind of a 360 workforce solutions firm, so I can kind of start with our staffing division. Again, we were strong in admin. We now have really strong divisions spanning from IT, science, real estate, finance and accounting, fashion and retail, and a few others. Mm-hmm. I think the growth of Atrium Staffing is really interesting and pretty phenomenal with where we started and where we are today. Fully national solution. We've productized a few offerings and really invested in a lot of verticals to bring them into being a considerable amount of our annual revenue. IT being one of those, which we can talk about, I think, a little bit later.
Yeah,
in the podcast here. Flipping to our Atrium Works division. So we're the enterprise side of the business, and we focus on contingent workforce solutions. Atrium Works began about 2008 when we were doing really well for staffing a few of our clients, particularly in the biotech and pharma space. And our clients, one of our key clients said to us, you know, you guys are awesome with identifying, you know, hard to fill talent, and you're doing so great for us. But we also have this pre-identified group of individuals that we've identified ourselves, whether through referrals or their own searches, et cetera. They said, can you payroll them for us? So that is kind of where our employer of record payroll division started.
Yeah.
And we've really become a market leader in the EOR space. And then, of course, in the agent of record or AOR space today. added in MSP or managed services provider, and now direct sourcing, as well as talent technology consulting and RPO. So each of those have their own kind of stories. Yeah. But to focus on, I think with starting in that EOR space and having the foundation of being a recruitment company first, that gave us a really good footing to, again, become now a leader in direct sourcing as an example. I think what's really great about Atrium and how what I've enjoyed about being here and what was attractive to me to join in the first place is the innovation, how nimble and agile the company is. Yeah. I will say at Atrium, we're not afraid to try new things, particularly in the talent technology division. We're not afraid to try to use a technology for what it wasn't exactly built for and try to think about different solution design where we can take the people, process, and technology to see if it'll work for client delivery or for an internal challenge that we're trying to solve. But with all of that, I think, having a talent technology team in general, again, kind of shows that innovation and investment in technology, recognizing that when you have these large workforce solution offerings, each of those requires its own set of technologies. And that's what the talent tech team does all day, consult with our clients, work with our internal teams to make sure we are optimizing the use of technologies in current client programs, as well as introducing new technologies, whether they're our partners or we're going out to market and doing system selection for those clients, make sure that that best-in-class technology makes that, kind of 360 successful solution between people, process, technology for our client delivery across the firm.
That's absolutely really, this is kind of where I start to geek out about this stuff, because you guys have really evolved and created a responsive agile strategy to every single request and productize it. So I definitely want to roll our sleeves up and get into productizing a little bit later in today's episode. But I'd love to hear more about how your role has played into that process and kind of some history and background on your career and your involvement through Atrium as well.
Absolutely. So I started my career at Allegis Global Solutions, and I think that was especially looking back, a wonderful place to start my career in this contingent labor, or I'll call it this recruiting space. Right. I didn't major in, anything to do with staffing or contingent labor. You probably can nowadays, but I think a lot of people say this, but no one really, when you're little, you don't say, I want to grow up and work in contingent labor. It's like, yeah. It's just something that you kind of, I think it's enter. Absolutely. Yeah. And then you develop, for me anyway, I kind of developed a passion for it, especially from a technology and really solution design standpoint. And technology obviously has a big component of that. So started at AGS, and again, looking back, it was kind of like, I didn't realize it when I was in it, but looking back, I received such a versatile business experience working at AGS. I started out supporting an RPO account, and then quickly moved into an RPO leadership support role from a project coordinator, project management standpoint, supported a lot of leadership initiatives with RPO. At the time, we had won two really large global RPO accounts, so was experiencing exponential growth very quickly. And we were also partnering with an Australian-based company, Talent2, mm-hmm. ended up acquiring them. I also helped to project manage the collaboration of that partnership a couple of years after I'd started at Allegis. But received really great RPO experience, from a recruitment coordinator role all the way up to the president of the division, which I feel really fortunate for that experience. Had a lot of global travel because we were launching one account, a financial services account globally, and we're finishing up a technology company implementation. So kind of traveled to, I think, four different continents, which was pretty awesome. So early on in my career, I feel really grateful for that experience. And And then after the RPO kind of project management experience, moved into an implementation role, supporting MSP and RPO, a couple implementations, and a what is now called direct sourcing implementation, but it wasn't dubbed that at the time. But looking back, it's definitely what it was. It was a literally on-site agency for another financial services company. Yeah. We were implementing an applicant tracking system and CRM for that account. So I really enjoyed that, met, a lot of great people, clients, colleagues, partners, et cetera, tech partners, as well as service partners with the Talent 2 acquisition happening there. And then ended my career at Allegis, and I was there for 4 years, but I got a lot of, as I mentioned, a lot of versatile experience. Yeah. Our president at the time had started a new product development department. And I raised my hand for it. I was always interested in product development. It was an extension of our innovation team. And I was really, really interested in that. So raised my hand for it, was able to secure a position there and got a couple products off the ground. One's a custom software development product, another one productizing an offering. It was a retention offering for our RPO delivery team. And then a couple others, workforce planning was one of them, and a few other kind of partnerships and analytics projects that I was part of. And then I took that new product development job into Atrium. I wasn't really looking to leave, and kind of was referred to Atrium just to have a conversation. And I met Bernie Caputo, who's president of Atrium Works today. And really just what we found in our conversation was Atrium was missing the role that I was doing at Allegis. And again, that kind of nimble, agile culture here at Atrium developed my job description together, and then moved over to Atrium, brought that product development and project management structure to Atrium. And my first project was working on an independent contractor classification technology. So built that from the ground up. And another thing about Atrium, we definitely invest in our people and train properly. When I came in with Allegis, I had really great RPO, MSP experience and implementation, but I didn't have the staffing agency on the ground experience as well as the AOR and EOR. So those were kind of new. I always knew those were part of some MSP programs, but didn't know them at a granular level. So was able to really learn a lot. And my colleagues, Kelly Cotto, Jessica Jimenez, Lisa Miller, Teresa Rilli, and Bernie too, really invested in me in teaching me the AOR world, as well as EOR, but particularly all of the awesome, which you know all about, the awesome laws and different,
us every single day.
Yes, the legislative landscape that surrounds independent contractors and the freelance, gig economy, et cetera. And, I never really would have thought about that until I got here. And so we built Jessica Jimenez was my partner in crime for a few years, building our Engagent tool. It's our independent contractor tool. It's called Engagent. And we still have it today. And we're doing a big revamp at the moment, which is exciting. But we were able to launch that together and hit the ground running with that. Prior to Engagent, it was all manual processes, share drives, distribution, email lists, kind of, everybody gets creative with their own kind of manual solutions. It's amazing what you can do with Google Sheets and yeah, spreadsheets these days. Yeah. I have so many conversations with clients about explaining why technology is better than spreadsheets. which takes some doing sometimes. But yeah, I felt really, again, fortunate with Atrium, where they invested in me to teach me the core of the business for what Engagent was supporting. And then kind of fast forward to today, I think we about halfway through my tenure here at Atrium. I started out in product development, but of course now I'm talent technology. I think halfway through we came to this kind of fork in the road of build, partner, or buy. And we really went all in on that partner strategy. We still have, such as Engagent, we have our own custom software that we maintain, enhance, et cetera, and we'll iterate for our clients. Mm-hmm. But with the FMS world exploding and the awesome VMSs that came on the scene 4 or 5 years ago that are, you know, not your kind of traditional ones. And even the traditional ones that have been here for 20, 25 years are doing some really innovative upgrades, if you will, such as Beeline. So we felt that especially like the VMS world was very strong. FMS was getting really hot at the time. And we thought, you know, instead of investing probably millions of dollars into our own technology, which some of our competitors have done and are successful, we went the partner route. You know, TBD if we'll ever own our own FMS or VMS, but for now, the partner strategy has been really successful. I'm so appreciative of my versatile and amazing tech partnerships. We have 25 of them in about 8 different HR tech categories, spanning from vendor management systems, freelance management systems, ATSs, CRMs, rate benchmarking, assessments, and kind of the list goes on. So we're able to, as I mentioned before, again, you know, provide all of those solutions with really strong tech partnerships and the talent tech team kind of in that seat to make sure that the right technologies are in the right accounts and they're helping to provide successful client delivery.
Ooh, that is so cool. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of the mantra adaptability equals survivability. And I love how, you know, your experience and the flourishing of Atrium's own company profiles, plural on that, has almost responded to every single nuance or major timeline event that's happening to the industry as a whole. And some, dare I say, would even consider some of those events to be threatening to the industry. You know, you hear a lot about the talk of direct sourcing or what automation and AI mm-hmm. with the MSP and the VMS did, but instead, you know, the route was taken to productize and service the response to that market trend that's happening. And I love that. And I think we'll get into deeper on some of those, but I want to hear the background a little bit further on, you know, how you guys conceptualized the direct sourcing offering, when you guys started to see that in the industry, because as I know it, this isn't necessarily something new to the Atrium team. This has been around for several years for you guys, but it's been around for maybe 18 months in the industry as a whole, I think as common nomenclature. Can you dive deeper into that for us?
Yes, absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head with the direct sourcing concept in general, because we are a company that was born out of recruitment and staffing. Yeah. The concept of direct sourcing can be a little scary because you're wondering, you know, is if we're developing a direct sourcing solution on the Atrium Work side of the house, how it would that negatively impact the Atrium staffing side of the house? So mm-hmm. lots of internal conversation there. And in the end, we took the approach of harnessing this offering and really trying to be one of the first leaders in productizing it correctly. To your point, like back when I was at Allegis, it's, you know, direct sourcing has probably, you know, 4 different names of what it was leading up to what it is now.
And they were rolling back sourcing. In the day, right?
Yes. Yeah. I talked to one of my partners at TalentNet the other day, and he's like, you know, we need to rename this because it's still to this day very confusing. As if you're coming from a direct hire standpoint, direct sourcing means a totally different thing.
Totally.
So maybe we can talk to SIA, we'll come up with something. But I think we, you know, after a lot of kind of internal collaboration and conversation, we did launch our direct sourcing offering with a couple existing clients. So our first 2 direct sourcing accounts were expansions of accounts that we already had.
Best place to start, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And for one of our clients, it really, we took on a set of roles that were kind of roles that the rest of, within their contingent labor MSP program, they were the roles that not many suppliers wanted to work on. So, and it made sense for the types of roles that they were, but we were willing to take those on, make that investment in a team, in a technology, because we added an applicant tracking system to our direct sourcing team on top of the VMS that's being used there. And it was a risk. And I have to give kudos to my manager, president of our division, Bernie Caputo, because we took that risk and it took time and investment in people, technology, et cetera. And it ended up paying off. We ended up filling these roles for the client very quickly, over a period of a few months. And then because we did really well in this one area, we were then granted other jobs from other functional areas that were a little easier to fill, or more traditional corporate roles where we could be a real player in the program. And now we're consistently, you know, in the top five of supplier scorecards with that client today. And I think that, you know, with direct sourcing, what we've tried to, whenever we're trying to, you know, sell direct sourcing or speak to our clients and prospects about it, the four most important items are, I would say, candidate experience, cost savings, the tier zero exclusive, typically 48 hours, and then using the client's brand. We now have over a dozen direct sourcing accounts. And within those, it's not like we definitely get all four with each of those accounts. It does vary. And there's different reasons for each of why we can or can't get that exclusive, or we can use the brand, but then have some considerations. And in some accounts, we absolutely have all four, including direct hiring manager access, as an example. And we're part of intake calls and debriefs for candidate review, et cetera. And the more touch points you have, kind of, you know, the more successful you'll be in that program. But I think that because we made that initial investment and took that risk, as mentioned, it's, you know, lucky that it's paid off. From a talent technology standpoint, we were able to solidify partnerships in the direct sourcing space. TalentNet, Work Llama, and LiveHire are our main direct sourcing tech partners today. I will say we also, and I've seen other competitors do this lately as well, utilizing, again, those companies that weren't typically built for contingent labor or built for direct sourcing, such as Avature, iSIMS, Phenom, Beamery. And we're now seeing those, and we ourselves have done, we're seeing those tools used for direct sourcing and for contingent labor recruiting in general. And I think it's nice to see in the industry where workforce solutions companies are willing to do this, and that those technology companies are actually seeing if they can do this right, it's a huge opportunity for them. I mean, it's a whole new market that they can sell to. And I think a lot of those traditionally direct hire ATS CRM focused companies are seeing this as a moment of monetization and a new revenue growth opportunity, because if they can kind of figure out contingent labor, then, you know, it covers total talent management.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fascinating, especially with that recent trend on outside tech companies looking to potentially get into the space. I want to take it a few step backs and maybe get underneath the covers here of the whole concept of productizing offerings. If we were to take a crash course in the next 90 to 120 seconds on best practices, on really looking to consider and further develop productizing potential service line, what do you think would be some of those steps to take?
Great question. So I think
if you can teach us how to productize in 120, I know that this is really an area that just drives a lot of passion in you. And I think the audience would love to hear some of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think productizing, I can use the example from our Atrium staffing side of the business. I think if you go back when I first started, Atrium, super strong and very well known in the life sciences space, admin space, creative fashion. We were literally on Fifth Avenue. So we were, you know, in New York City. So there were kind of those, I would say, 5 to 6 areas that we knew are kind of the audience knew that we were really strong in. In the last few years, we've really invested in IT and what we now call digital transformation. I think we've productized what originally started as a Salesforce offering, noticing that in the IT world, Salesforce has basically its own vertical at this point. Different Salesforce jobs, there's probably hundreds of them at this point. So our staffing leaders, again, took that innovative approach and productized that into an offering. So you're not really doing anything too different, but packaging that up, getting a really close team. So first of all, getting those recruiters that are already working on those Salesforce roles, get them on the same team, collaborating, trying to pull synergies from the different clients that they're working with. And then from a marketing standpoint, the product marketing is huge when you're productizing something. So we originally started out with introducing a Salesforce division. And now that's been so successful that it's actually, our marketing team just recently launched a digital transformation role, and it's really cloud-based roles. So anything having, so Salesforce is now a vertical within that larger digital transformation space, which is a division in a division within our IT department. So within the last 5 years, we've been able to really become a player in the IT space on top of the other areas that we were already strong in. And we've brought on a couple key leaders for this division. And it's been really fruitful for Atrium as a whole, both on Atrium Staffing and Atrium Works within our direct sourcing and RPO solutions, to now be a player in IT. And from a revenue standpoint, IT is now a considerable piece of our overall annual revenue. So I think productizing it, I think marketing it, it gets its own webpage on our site. And I think getting out there and doing blog posts and talking about it as well, to let the market know that you have, made this a product, and explaining exactly why Atrium is so good in it. Obviously, case studies help as well. But the positioning to collaborate with your marketing team to make sure that positioning is spot on will help to finalize that productization, and then eventually that market launch, if you will.
Yeah.
Kind of shout it from the rooftops once you're done on LinkedIn and different social venues.
PR release. Yeah, it really is the art of getting the right stakeholder team involved, formalized, stood up, and then the execution thereafter in the marketing front. And I love how you said, really it's not much different than what you're doing now. It's getting everything and all of those bells and whistles tied to it and standing it up, making sure that it's lifted off successfully. I think that's definitely a simple way to look at it. Probably a lot more to that, but I'm curious one of the things that we talked about before in our prior sessions leading up to today's episode is some of those tech innovation platforms that really excite you in these times. You mentioned the FMS tool, the freelancer management tool. I know that you guys have stood up something. You've had a chance to, have your career expand into this AOR landscape. And this is particularly one of the tech tools out there that really, you like a lot. But can you dive deeper into I can understand the background on why not wanting to evolve further into technology and looking to expand on your partnership, but knowing that this FMS technology is out there, can you dive deeper into that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the FMS space, we dipped our toe into it probably 6 years ago now, 5 or 6 years ago. We originally partnered with Work Market to start. Work Market, freelance management, I would say kind of a pioneer in the freelance management space, especially with the acquisitions that they've had, was able to, or the definition of an FMS is that you can manage the entire freelance or temporary labor process from A to Z without any, extra help. I think the gap that Work Market had was the payroll. Yeah. And then the gap that Work Market was filling for us was we didn't have the technology, that digital Rolodex of freelancers to provide to our clients. Right. So it made a lot of sense at that time. And that's still in play for our other FMS partnerships today. So I think the lines do start to get a bit blurred, especially because Atrium, we have our own classification tool. I think many of the mature FMSs today also have classification tools inside them. And
it's so subjective too, right? I mean, what is going to be a proper classification? It's just your own team's interpretation of the laws behind it.
Absolutely. And there's so many factors with the different states. And I think you can, our philosophy on it anyway, is that the technology can take you almost, it can get you almost there, but it always needs a human checkpoint. Some of our FMS partners also have a human checkpoint. Others don't. Others will give the classification within seconds with an algorithm that they have in a scoring mechanism. So I think what's really nice, and I feel fortunate with our FMS partnerships, because we can start to become competitors in a lot of different ways. And you can kind of say that about many of our partnerships and tech partnerships in general, but when we look to partner with a company, the biggest piece that I look for anyway is transparency and a culture fit, and that a similar mantra that the client is always, you know, is what the client success is what we're always both working toward. So I think if we can just not let our own kind of revenue goals get in the way of that, it usually works out really well. I'm also a fan of the karma approach. I think a lot of technologies out there have reseller agreements, and we do have a few of those. I don't love them, but we have some because it just makes sense in certain types of HR tech categories. But I think the best partnership is a karma partnership. It's like, if we're going to go out to business, first of all, if we're going into a prospect together, we're both going to win that business together. And then we'll obviously both benefit financially. But really, and we've had a lot of scenarios where tech partners will refer business to us when it's not even really a lead for them and vice versa. And with that karma approach, it ends up kind of fortunate enough that it's been able to work out well for us from a revenue standpoint and for our partners as well. But I think specifically for the FMS space, it works best when the FMS partner and Atrium are really flexible on, if you look at what the client needs and they want, if they want agent of record, they want indemnification on that classification, and they want the technology, we'll have an open conversation with that client of who they want the agent of record to be. Because the agent of record could be the freelance management system, it could be Atrium, it could be the client themselves. Mm-hmm. And we've had the most success with the FMSs that are most flexible with that decision. And again, if we're both thinking of the client's needs and the initial challenge that they came to us for and have that in mind, it ends up usually working out for all parties. But I think there, as mentioned before, it gets a little gray with FMSs, but we've been fortunate enough to have some really great partners behind us and get the right solutions for our clients together.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it really showcases the deep development that you guys have maintained in your partnership strategy, and being able to have overall in this business, every single implementation, every single workforce management system is going to require some level of custom development. So it is a fine line of balancing the different providers that are at play and who can leverage what for the unique situation relative to that client. You know, you've had a chance to walk us through the productizing, you know, some of the trends that we see happening with direct sourcing. And you even touched on this a little bit with the freelancer management tool, but I'd love to dive deeper into this partnership strategy that you guys have developed and you know, you really being at the forefront of that evolvement with Atrium itself. It's pretty cool. I've had a chance to check it out online. It's very robust. I think it offers a great solution to all of these different intricacies that are involved with each unique program. Can you give us some deeper dive into that particular movement with Atrium?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll give you a little bit of history with how the tech partnerships started. So when I first started, my very first project was that independent contractor evaluation tool. I also worked on a video resume technology from a software development standpoint, wow, which was fun. Yeah. But then I also very quickly, my third project was, we have a New York City based entertainment client and they need a vendor management system. And at the time we were kind of doing MSP for them already without a tool in place. The spend at that time was under 20 million. So when I went to go find a VMS partner, some providers would not entertain, you know, an account with that spend level. Like their minimums were 20, 30 million as an example. And at that time, I felt that the VMS world was kind of lacking a strong set of technologies for the mid-market, if you will. I think SIA deems that as, you know, 10 to 50 million is your mid-market, and then getting into your larger market after that. So before I entered Atrium, we had kind of informal, I would say, relationships with VMSs and other technologies, but nothing, and there was no one to really look after and nurture these tech partnerships, which is what the talent technology team, of course, does today. But I was, again, tasked with finding the VMS. What was really difficult at the time was finding a VMS that would that would be a fit for the mid market and then also not a competitor of ours because, and then again, that was that like build partner buy scenario. It's like, well, do we build a VMS or do we acquire one or, you know, what are our options?
Not necessarily vendor neutral either. Right. In some cases, a lot
you
of
got
cases.
It. Yeah, absolutely. So I, went technology shopping, if you will, and went to SIA and found a current list of VMSs, many of which I was familiar with from my experience at Allegis and then into Atrium as well. And we ended up partnering with what was then PeopleFluent and now Vector VMS. Yeah. Once I went through an SIA report, I was like, absolutely no question. This has got to be it because they were number one in the mid-market area. They also didn't offer MSP. So it was almost a no-brainer. I had also had an existing relationship with PeopleFluent for implementing their applicant tracking system while at Allegis. So was fortunate enough to have some really great relationships to start with there. So that's where our partnerships first started was with Vector VMS. And they are still one of our very strong VMS partners today. And I love the team over there, Taylor Ramchandani and Fred Wyant and Irene. They're just great people. And we've been able to stand up a few programs together. And it's been a lot of fun with the Vector team. But to fast forward to today and more talk about our talent tech methodology, I think each category that we've built, there was a client need. VMSs was obviously the easiest one because we're an MSP player. So we needed those formal VMS partnerships. We now have five VMS partnerships today. And FMS, we felt we needed the partnership because our clients were asking for that visibility into their workforce, that digital Rolodex of they were wanting to search their own, to do their own sourcing, if you will, and search for their own talent, particularly in the creative world. The mm-hmm. FMS need was very apparent.
Right.
Yep, you got it. And then kind of going into ATS, CRM, and direct sourcing tech, we've delivered a bit of a niche, actually, what we call intern RPO programs or intern program design. We will we have probably a dozen programs stood up today, a few in the biotech and pharma space where we run the entire internship program from building or identifying the interns, posting the roles for the company, doing the technology implementation if needed, and then all the way through to interviewing, scheduling, offer, onboard, et cetera. And then post go live, we'll also do the 30, 60, 90 surveys of kind of for retention, seeing how it's going, and then post internship as well. And we do this for companies year round for co-op and intern programs for companies that are kind of near universities that have co-op programs, as an example. For some companies, we do lots of summer internship programs. But because of that intern RPO offering, we really needed a very strong applicant tracking system partners. Sometimes we will use or optimize the client's applicant tracking system of what they're already using for direct hire or in other facets of contingent labor for intern recruiting, as an example. Other times we'll bring an applicant tracking system to the table. iSIMS, for example, has been a really awesome partner for us, and we've had a lot of success with incredibly configurable tool. And mm-hmm. we've been able to really kind of use it for both direct sourcing and intern RPO quite successfully. I think with that, we had ATS, and then coming into CRM, we were kind of constantly in the seat of recommending CRMs to our clients, especially when intern RPO and direct sourcing was heating up. And this was really before it was called direct sourcing, but it was really contingent labor recruiting. When companies were taking a more acute look at contingent labor, like I love seeing contingent labor roles posted on career sites and these contingent labor talent communities. I think in an SIA report, I saw only 6% of the Fortune 1000 have contingent labor roles posted on their site or have a talent community for them. But that's definitely something that we're always promoting and implementing for our clients for direct sourcing and intern RPO. But with the intern RPO and direct sourcing, that brought us to partner with ATSs and CRMs. And we've been able to do some tech consulting from a CRM standpoint for both direct hire and contingent. And then kind of leading into the proper direct sourcing tech, TalentNet in 2017, I think was the only direct source proper kind of productized as a direct sourcing technology. And that's what they were built to be was contingent labor, ATS and CRM. So they had no competitors when they first started. And we have a wonderful partnership with TalentNet. And then quickly LiveHire kind of again productized their LiveHire had been around for years, Australian-based company. Awesome company, fantastic culture. And they are an example of they started out in direct hire, but then they really hit the ground running in contingent labor and then further in the US market. So they're a real player today. And then finally, WorkLlama, again, got their roots in direct hire ATS and then productized for specifically for direct sourcing. So we feel really strong with those three and love being in the seat of, because we don't own our own tech, we can recommend the right direct sourcing tech, whether it's one of those three or an ATS CRM scenario for our clients for each time that we go into a net new client or prospect, or if it's an upsell moment where we started out with doing EOR payroll, a little bit of AOR, MSP, and then direct sourcing coming as a phase two, phase three moment. That's where our talent tech team kind of nerds out and we can really do the discovery, seeing what technologies the client already has, the processes that our account team is already doing, and then recommend the best fit from a tech standpoint. So I think we have this large tech ecosystem now, and we kind of call it our tool belt that we can go into to put the right things together. And I do partner with our solution design team led by Tara DeGasperis and Teresa Rilly. And my colleagues, Nancy Miller and Nicole, and we love those moments where we roll up our sleeves and we do solution design for our clients to take the workflows. We're like workflow queens over here and technology, yes. Like adding the technology to it.
Queens, I love that. Yeah. I'm stealing that. Yeah. I'm stealing that phrase. 100%.
Awesome. So we get really excited about that. And we feel fortunate that we have these wonderful tech partners to lean on as needed. And they're always just as excited to get into the solution design weeds as we are, which is nice. But I think, and there are times where the technology that our clients want just doesn't exist within our tech ecosystem. So we will do that system shopping, if you will, for our clients as a consulting moment as well.
Yeah. And I think that's been, if there's anything that we can take away from the overall theme of today's episode, is really becoming strategic in the way that you respond to a naturally trending inquiry from your client. And kudos to the team at Atrium, because it really takes the leadership team to push these initiatives and drive these changes and invest the time and the resources into these different model offerings. For me, it's really inspiring as a co-founder with my base pay and knowing the phrase, we've always done it this way, is not something that I think is a mantra at all at Atrium. You guys are just agile and responsive to things that are happening. And I love how that is really built, your product team and also your partnership team. It's just happening within the pipeline and the dialogue that you guys have each and every single day with the clients. And that's exciting to see. I know that we're coming up on time, but this is going to be an episode that I revert back to, and a lot of great takeaways for me. And I know for the audience as well, but I'd like to get to know Vanessa a little bit more. Tell us a little bit about, your content diet. What are you reading up on? What do you stay up to date on in this very fast paced information, digital age, sucked into the black hole of content? I know we have to be mindful of it. I almost think of it like your diet, like on what you consume to eat every single day. What do you consume to take in on content every single day, Vanessa?
Yeah, great question. So I'll answer that professionally and personally. In order to stay up to date professionally in the workforce solutions world, I subscribe to SIA Daily News. I feel like that you have to be in the know on everything that comes in that email. And I'd always encourage, whenever we have new employees, it's one of the first things I say is make sure you subscribe to that publication. Yeah. From a tech standpoint, Crunchbase is a really awesome resource. I love that you can, the amount of research you can get from technology companies regarding their funding and what competitors they have, their founders, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Really nice resource. So they're also their daily news as well. And then just some other research in addition to SIA, Ardent Partners, Talent Tech Labs are also are always putting out really awesome content for my team and me to stay relevant. Another one is Talent Function that was acquired by Cielo, but they're San Diego-based women-owned firm and was super psyched for them to once they did get acquired. But Elaine Ordler there is awesome and have had some nice conversations with her. But the talent tech consulting and reports that they're able to put out are have been really helpful to me throughout my career here at Atrium. Yeah. I think from a personal standpoint, in order to kind of just keep up with the news, I try to listen to Up First to get my daily diet of news of what's going on in the world. I think when I used to live in New York City, I always listened to that on the subway, and it was a perfect amount of time for my commute. Yeah. Now I'll try to listen to it on the way back from school drop off, but the way my commute to school drop off is kind of taken over by, you know, Shake My Sillies out and different
Cocoa Melon.
Yes, go, you got it. But I think kind of beyond like staying, you know, up to date with news, I think just different content, you know, venues that I utilize or kind of what when I'm trying to not think about work, I do have TikTok. So I'm one of those folks that's like unfortunately consumed in that probably longer than I need to be.
Guilty. I am so guilty of that too. It's been my recent 2022 discovery.
Yeah. It can be a black hole sometimes, but I think that I joined a webinar the other day by a recruitment marketing firm and talking about how TikTok is changing the way, or at least becoming an emerging technology for recruiting, and the way that especially Gen Z they're doing TikTok resumes as an example. So we at Atrium are actually planning on putting out some TikTok employer branding type content soon, which is pretty cool. Yeah. Like, I try to tell people like it's professional too. It's not just like
oh yeah, it figures out your algorithm really quick though.
Yes,
like, I get a lot of and all that stuff.
Oh yeah, I get a lot of cleaning ones. A lot of cleaning and organization hacks. And then one of my good friends actually just recommended a book to me, Where You'll Find Me. It's called The Risk Decisions and Last Climb of Kate Matrosova. And this, my really good friend recommended the book to me. She's a Siberia native and was living in New York City, was really killing it on Wall Street, her and her husband, and was really into mountaineering and skiing, hiking, et cetera. And unfortunately, you know, as the book says, it was her last climb, but it's been a really good read for me. So I'm in the middle of it right now, but I think it's just a good story of how, you know, determined she was, prepared, et cetera. Hiking just to like get into like the Vanessa World, hiking and skiing and mountaineering. And I grew up in, it was a, she was hiking Mount Washington, the White Mountains, I should say. And that's an area that I kind of grew up doing and hiking and skiing with my dad. So that from a content perspective, that book I'm really in the middle of and enjoying it. Awesome. And just kind of, yeah, like reading about this really badass chick that was doing awesome things all the time.
Where so, you'll find me. I'm going to have to check that out.
Where you'll find me. Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's been absolutely amazing having you on the show, Vanessa. I think everything that, you know, have seen evolve into your career and how that's mixed in with what Atrium is doing and at the forefront of so many different innovations. I'm excited for you and the whole team there. And I know that you share a wealth of knowledge. I hope we have the opportunity to collab again, because it's been a lot of fun having you on the show. And really, we just want to say thank you for being on the show. And thank you to our audience as well for joining us. Time is one of those things that's very valuable to give to one another. So we appreciate everyone spending some time with us today on the Ivy Podcast.
Absolutely. Same here. And thank you for having me.
Wonderful. We'll see you guys on the next episode. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.